century. Well, I was lying in a burned out basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one. All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. We're glad you're joining us tonight. Our first 2 hours have certainly been hot, let me tell you. We've talked about some of the current events that are out there, not just the spill in the Gulf, but also emergency preparedness. If you're just joining us, welcome to the program. This is Hour 3 of X Squared Radio. We'll be here for about 55 minutes, so if you want to call in, be part of the program, it's 415-762-1161. Pardon me. 415-762-1161. Anywhere on planet or off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us. 415-762-1161. I also want you to pay attention. Go to our Facebook, X Squared Radio Facebook, or Brooks Agnew Facebook. We've got some really interesting stuff up there on this oil spill. Leilani Munter's video testimony is there, some of the photographs that she personally took while she was out with some of the fishermen down there in the Gulf. And we also want to let you know that the ebook for Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, is out. You can get to it by going to rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com. Pick up the ebook. All of the drawings and photographs are in color. That book is in heavy editing right now, getting ready to come out in print. We have been very, very satisfied with the way the editing is going. Looks like this book is going to go traditional method instead of POD. We'll see what happens. It depends on you, of course. But you can get your copy of the ebook, which gives you 25% off of the printed version, rememberingthefuturebook.com. Also, if you're interested in the subject of 2012 or the origin and destiny of the Earth, such great subjects, the Ark of Millions of Years trilogy is available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walden Books, all of those stores, but you can also get an autographed copy at arkofmillionsofyears.com. Now, the reason I encourage you to do that, not only do you get the autograph copies, you get the trilogy, special shipping on that trilogy, and you get the first two volumes in audio version for free. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read them for you. You can listen to them on the way to work, put them on your iPod or your other MP3 device, and just listen to the book while you have the new copies on your shelf. So if you're interested in the subject, Forward Magazine called them the most comprehensive work ever written on the subject of 2012 end times. Get yourself prepared, have a little entertainment, and pick up the books. This hour, we talked a little bit about the X-37B passing over. Tomorrow, which is the 31st, it is going to be passing over the eastern seaboard three times tomorrow night, somewhere around 9:30 p.m., and then again at just after 10 o'clock, and again just after 11 o'clock. So you'll get to see that spacecraft coming over the Earth three times in one night. Pretty rare. It's a little faint, about as bright as one of the stars of the Big Dipper, not as bright as Jupiter, like the International Space Station. And if you feel like getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you can see the International Space Station come over. It's very bright. But the X-37B is the new space shuttle that was launched by the Air Force. This is a secret mission. We have no idea what it costs, and we don't know what's on board. It's going to be in orbit for 9 months. Now, we have dedicated a couple of programs back on the weaponization of space. We've had Alfred Lambermont Weber on the program talking about it back when we were getting ready to drop a projectile onto the moon. Many people call it the bombing of the moon. It was a kinetic experiment where the soil blown out into the atmosphere, as it were, of the moon would be spectrographically analyzed to check for the presence of water and other elements. That mission was a success, and they determined that there was ice in the soil of the moon. Now, the interesting thing about this, many people don't pay a lot of attention to this stuff, but the interesting thing about this is now we have confirmation of H3. That is a hydrogen 3 molecule, very, very good at producing energy. We have chemical oxygen to the weight of 25% by weight, and we have ice in the lunar soil. Well, it doesn't take a great chemist to figure out if you have energy and you have oxygen and you have water, then you have the possibility of making a habitat on the moon very easily. That means that with a few raw materials in the proper proportions, a shelter could be built on the moon and a permanent settlement. Now, this is a lot different than the International Space Station. For one thing, it's about 245,000 miles further away from Earth than the International Space Station. It's more stable, and guess what? You get gravity. Now, it's 1/6 what we have here on Earth, but you don't have the debilitating problems of weightlessness, even for short term, especially for long term in the International Space Station. You don't have that problem on the astronauts. And it's easy, much easier, to build shelter on solid ground that can withstand the electromagnetic radiation from the sun. Once you pass the Van Allen radiation belts, you are exposed to full-on high-speed protons emitted by the sun and other bodies outside of our heliosphere, which now have free access to the Earth now that the solar wind is so low, due to a very quiet sun. We don't have any idea why that's happening either. But now you're on a satellite that's 245,000 miles away from Earth, always facing Earth. Yes, you do have darkness and light, but you've got oxygen, and you have water, and you have power. So you can make artificial light, you can make artificial heat, and you never run out. You have an endless supply. Now, the moon, because it has far less gravity, and of course, an almost non-existent atmosphere, makes an excellent place to relaunch heavy lift vehicles. That means that a steady stream of projectiles could be lifted into space, launched toward the moon, captured in moon orbit, brought to the surface, processed, built in low gravity and zero, almost zero atmosphere, above the surface, below the surface, and then reassembled into larger payloads and launched much cheaper into deep space or to leapfrog to other planets like Mars. Now, this makes not only logical space exploration sense, it makes logical economic sense as well. The payback from efforts like this is usually about anywhere from 10 to 30 to 1. That means that if it cost a gazillion dollars to get to the moon, you're going to get 10 gazillion dollars back in economy and technology and innovations. Now, one thing is for sure. I'll make this statement, and I'll ask you to call in 415-762-1161, and we'll talk about it. 415-762-1161. Do we or do we not have the realization that the nation that controls the moon will control the earth? To have control of space that far out, a sizable colony, maybe as many as 50,000 people working as a community, developing new technologies, having access not only to radiation but elements that we don't have here on the earth in large supply. We could actually perform fairly well-developed asteroid mining. Hauling an asteroid to the moon makes a lot more sense than trying to haul an asteroid to Earth. The moon is much closer to these kinds of things. You could develop a safe community, work on the moon or within the moon, and be able to take space exploration to the next level. Now, we've toyed with the idea here that our defense budget is entirely too large, $1.3 trillion, compared to about $170 million for the space program per year. Sometimes that gets up in the low billions. But we're talking about $1.3 trillion on national defense. People, we're not fighting an army. There are no navies out there. There are no air forces out there that are any challenge to us whatsoever. We are making friends around the world through economics. Yes, there are a few rogue nations that are upset with that. And we'll always have criminals out there trying to act like armies. But we don't need $1.3 trillion in national defense. But $1.3 trillion in space research. Now, that would change the game altogether. If we switched that budget, the other nations that consider us even mildly their enemy would ask themselves, what do they know that we don't? Why are they spending $1.3 trillion to return to the moon? Do they realize how much money that is? Do they realize something we don't realize? Is something coming that we can't see? Maybe, just maybe, a leadership like that, a point of focus like that, would change us away from living as nations, banner to banner, creed to creed, religion to religion, and start living as a planet, start living as a race. Because if what many of the churches and organizations are telling us is true, that we are the only humans in the universe. Earth's a pretty fragile basket to keep all the eggs in, don't you think? If we have the capability of exploring, of moving outward, of making it more possible for the human race to survive, don't you think it would be the responsible thing to do instead of spending so much time and so much money innovating new ways to kill people and break things? I think so. We could talk about it. 415-762-1161. Anyone out there listening? 415-762-1161. I'd love to talk about it. I think it's fascinating. We had a lot of smart people out there, Carl Sagan and others, who dreamed about space travel. And you know what? They got to see it in their lifetime. In 1969, Neil Armstrong stepped out of the Eagle onto the moon. 12 other footprints followed those initial footprints. Most of them were Eagle Scouts. That was space travel, people. It ended. It ended in 1972. 1972. Did anybody even know what a cell phone was in 1972? No. Let's talk about it. Scott from Daytona, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Brooks. I never had the pleasure of seeing Who Killed the Electric Car. There was a movie presented a while back. I believe it's been shown on TV. But from what I've gathered, the electric cars that were made around the turn of the century were destroyed. Is there any guarantee that won't happen again with people coming out with electric cars now? Or is there going to be opposition? What do you think is going to happen when electric cars start being produced in our country?
Yes, I think there'll be a problem like that. I'll tell you the way I think it might happen, because the Department of Motor Vehicles and the NHTSA, that's the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, is so powerful now. And what they've done is they've set up a precedent with Toyota. You know, Toyota became the number one car producer in America just a couple of years ago. And that was so upsetting to the former number one, General Motors, that with a little bit of lobbying and well-placed golf games, sure enough, Toyota had a quality problem, a sticking electronic throttle. And believe me, Toyota was not the main culprit of this. There were other car companies that had even more people die because of quality problems than Toyota. But Toyota was number one. And so the government got involved and they started recalling cars, millions of them. I can tell you right now, if they can recall millions of Toyotas from happy customers all across the country, they can darn sure go after a few thousand electric cars. No challenge whatsoever.
And I've been in a Dodge Charger where the accelerator's gotten stuck before, and I've been in, I wasn't driving at that time, but I was driving when my Delta 88 accelerator got stuck, and that's an engine you don't want to be in the car when the accelerator gets stuck, because it's a very, you know, a cylinder engine there. And so it's that's what I was suspecting, that it was all about getting back at Toyota for producing relatively outstanding vehicles, and then who, after what? After all this Toyota stuff, General Motors offers deals for Toyota drivers, and so General Motors all of a sudden sells more cars as a result of this whole thing happening.
Yeah, and didn't General Motors just recently hang the banners out at all their dealerships that they had repaid their $40 billion with interest 5 years ahead of time?
I've not been by our General Motors. I cannot say, but right now I'm driving a Nissan, but that's only because that's the better of the cars I could have gotten at the time.
I like
but
Nissan.
I would have bought electric had I been able to afford it and been able to gotten an extension cord to reach from my parking space to my apartment so that I could use the electricity from my apartment. But that's kind of like, that's what I'm up against here.
Last month, the Rasmussen poll released a study that 17% of Americans are now ready to buy an electric car. 17%. That's a huge market. When you're considering 14.5 million new cars selling every year in this country, 17% of that market, I'll take that all day long. Unfortunately, there are no electric cars being produced in America right now, with the exception of the Tesla Roadster, which at $110,000 a copy, I dare say I won't be driving one.
And you have an excellent idea of starting with an electric truck, because, I mean, I see mostly trucks when I'm on the road. I mean, everyone has a truck. It's kind of like the American dream. It's like everyone, you know, it's like, you know, you can have independence with it. You can haul whatever you want. You can move things if you want, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's the greatest thing, but it's also the biggest gas guzzler next to the Wrangler Jeep. But, you know, to start with the truck and have an electric, because that's what America wants. They want the truck. They want that independence. They want it's kind of like the stagecoach of 21st century. You know, it's like, you know, I can go anywhere in this thing. I can go out to California. I can go out to New York. I can do anything I want and have that freedom that America stands for so much.
Well, I've been driving a truck for the better part of 30 years. I'm on my third truck of my lifetime. I've only owned three vehicles, and I drive them, 300,000 miles. But since I've had an electric truck, I have to tell you, I just don't put diesel in that Dodge very often. Now, when I have to drive more than 100 miles, or I have to haul the trucks to a show or something, of course we fuel it up. But all the little trips to the hardware store, the movies, the mall, everywhere, it's all electric. And, you know, if I could actually drive it legally on the road, that would even be better. Right now I have to drive it and I have to dodge, you know, all the cops because it doesn't have a license plate on it because I can't register it through the DMV. I have an NHTSA permission letter to drive it on the road, but I can't sell them to anybody. So what can I do? We're slowly going through the FMVSS program, crash testing the trucks. It's very expensive. A couple of $1 million later, we're going to get through that process, and then we'll be able to manufacture the vehicles in the U.S. So hopefully we're in the mix, and maybe there'll be 10 or even 20 companies making and selling electric vehicles in the United States.
Last year you were asking for donations. Is there still the need for donations at this time?
Oh, I would say so. I just watched the YouTube last summer of Obama up in Indiana giving away the $382 million in grant funds. It was the only electric vehicle grant in the last 2 years in the United States, and it all went to the major car makers. Not one single electric vehicle company got a dime out of it. That was so frustrating to watch him up there at that microphone telling the people to rousing standing ovations that he was going to put $2 billion into innovative electric cars. It didn't happen. It went to universities and it went to the major car makers, and not one new job was created. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the donations.
Is there an address that we could send money to?
Well, of course. I mean, I don't want to push my own website, but I can tell you that if you go out there and look for companies like Vision Motor Cars, you can always go to visionmotorcars.com. There's always a way. There are methods of providing money. And some of these companies are public companies. You can go buy stock in their companies and get them up and on their feet. Most of us are privately held at this point because there's no sense in going public unless you've got an event to go public over. Even Tesla hasn't gone public yet. He's still raising private funds. Of course, the $50 million written to him by Mr. Toyota a week and a half ago was definitely a good shot in the arm.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I'll get off so other people can call in. Thank you, Dr. Brooks.
I appreciate you so much, Scott. Have a wonderful week down there, and be safe on the Memorial Day.
Thank you.
Good night. All right, so what we're talking about here is the advent of alternative energy. We've talked about biodiesel, cellulosic ethanol, electric cars, wave generators that can sit out in the ocean and take advantage of swells in the water and generate power for coastal cities. We've talked about river generators that are not dams. These are turbines that turn underneath the water. They don't interfere with boat traffic. They have to be maintained every now and then because they get something like a tree caught in them. You have to go bring them up, clean them out, put them down. But they generate 4 or 5 megawatts, which is enough to run a small community. And I don't know if you noticed or not, but 80% of the nation's population lives within 20 miles of a coast. It doesn't take rocket science to realize that these tidal generators, wave generators, and river generators can produce a lot of clean, renewable energy, electricity that doesn't cost the community anything. I don't know if you've been out west lately, but all of the reservoirs are full. They're at full pool, which means the water has to go over the dam 24 hours a day, which means they're generating electricity that's so cheap that they're giving it away. 3 cents a mil, and they offered Microsoft almost a year's worth of free electricity to build their data center in Moses Lake, Washington, because the electricity was in surplus. They're making more than we could possibly use because of the hydroelectric power. Now, out here in the Midwest, in Kentucky and Tennessee, we rely on coal to make our energy. That's not very clean. Some of it runs on natural gas, but most of it on coal. The point is that these boilers, these steam turbines, have to be spun up to meet the daytime loads with air conditioning and all kinds of factories and businesses running using electricity. But at nighttime, when things cool off and the lights go down, they can't just stop the turbines and start them up the next day. It takes hours and hours and hours to cool these things off. So they just leave it running. Where does the electricity go? Well, they route it to other grids because we can't use it. So electric vehicles are a use of nighttime energy. Cheap. I mean, you could drive an electric vehicle for about $1 a day. You could go back and forth to work for about $20 to $25 a month. Now, I don't know what you would do with the extra money, but we could spend the rest of the program here making a list if you like. I think everyone out there could use a few extra $1,000 a year. Those of you that get some kind of mileage reimbursement for the miles that you drive, that's all money in your pocket now. You'll still get the mileage reimbursement, but you don't have to buy the gasoline. It just makes sense, people. What you have to do is take control. You cannot wait for the government to feed out 25 cents at a time to these companies, keeping them on the edge of poverty year after year after year. Company after company goes out of business because they can't raise enough money to go into production to deliver these fine designs to you. Fisker, Phoenix, Bright, Vision Motor Cars, Zap, all kinds of electric car companies out here that make great automobiles, but you can't get your hands on them because they can't get the grant funds like General Motors, Ford, or Chrysler, and Nissan and Toyota. And I can tell you right now, those companies are not going to be producing affordable electric vehicles for you. It isn't going to happen. Forget about it. That Nissan Leaf, that pricing that you see doesn't include the battery, and it doesn't include the charging system. The charging system right now, $90 million. You know who bought it? You did. It will energize one city. One. Which means if you buy a Nissan Leaf in that town, you can't leave town because there's no place to charge the car up. So let's get practical, people. If you're going to have an affordable electric vehicle, it's going to come from a small company. It's going to come from Bright. It's going to come from Phoenix. It's going to come from Fisker. It's going to come from Vision Motor Cars. It's going to come from a company like that. Look them up. Find out what they need. Call them up and see what you can do to get their vehicles on the road. Talk to your local state legislators. Tell them to relax the DMV requirements on electric vehicles. And let me tell you, there are more regulations, not less, coming down the pike. Now you know what the oil companies have put out there? They have put a lobbyist trying to force the federal government to make electric vehicles make noise. You know why? Because they're saying the blind can't hear electric vehicles coming. Get serious, people. Cars have been quiet for a long, long time. They've been quiet for 40 years. What makes the noise on a car is the tires on the ground, the air going over the car. It's not the exhaust sound. You don't hear that from the front of the car. And a lot of cars are so quiet now, they don't make an exhaust sound. They don't have fans that turn unless the air conditioning is on. They're electric. get serious. These regulations are nothing more than an effort to keep electric vehicles off the highway. And who controls that? You control that. Call your insurance companies. Call your Department of Motor Vehicles. And write letters to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Tell them to resist these lobbyists trying to keep electric vehicles off the road. You're ready for yours now, aren't you? There are other alternative methods out there. Now they're looking at mid-size and small wind generators. Excuse me. It isn't practical for a single household to buy a wind generator. Who can afford $18,000 for a wind generator for a single house? You just can't afford it. You can't afford solar cells to provide the electricity for a household. It's just not possible. It's not feasible. Who wants to buy 5 or 6 years of electric power in advance? Sure, it pays itself off after 5 years. But are you going to live in that house for 5 years? Not many people do. Most people move between 5 and 8 years, and they're not going to invest $15,000 to $20,000 in alternative energy for a house. But a car they would do. Some of these mid-sized generators, though, are small enough that they can run a single community, like a subdivision. Most of the wind generators that are out on the market now are at least 1 megawatt, 1 to 2 megawatts. And it's not practical to put just one of them up. You have to put 10 or 15 of them up in order to make revenue off of the power, because you're going to be selling it to the grid. But if you're going off-grid, if you're not going to connect to the power lines, and you're going off-grid, and you're not worried about selling the excess power back to the power companies, which I can tell you takes an act of Congress, then you can buy one of these mid-sized generators. Now, this gets kind of affordable. When you're talking about 100 or 200 homes in a subdivision, street lights, air conditioning, electric stoves, water pumps, all that kind of stuff, one of these mid-sized generators would be just about right. This is a generator that could run a small community. And if you buy two of them where you have a backup, and you have some kind of storage device for times when you don't have much wind. After all, who wants to build their subdivision in an area that's windy all the time? You can run the lines to the subdivision and distribute it, but it's going to take a sizable development and investment. However, the fact that your light bill is local to your own co-op, you might be talking about 1 or even 2 cents a mil. That's pretty inexpensive. And the nice thing about it is, you can't ever be cut off. Your power is there all the time. If the major systems go down because a nuclear power plant goes offline, or a dam goes offline, or a coal-fired plant has a problem, your electricity never ends. That might be something that communities could do. Now, here's the good part. That community can be built off-grid, which means you don't have to build along the accepted power lines. You can go out into the more rural areas or undeveloped areas and build these small communities. And if you do it right, with the right kind of roads, where you have a bicycle lane on the side of the road, and you have some electric mass transportation in the community, and possibly places to work, and surrounded by areas of agriculture so you could supply most of your own food and water, now you're talking. Now you're talking green communities that can support themselves largely without any outside influence. They're not required to have daily trucks come in and fill up the local grocery store. It's filled up with a local farmer's market and a local rancher and a local animal farmer. I forgot what they're called. That's okay. It's been a 3-hour program. Give me a break. So this takes a little bit longer range thinking, but that kind of energy devices are out there. We also have the river generators. There are several companies that make these generators. They turn very slow speed, high torque, they turn a generator and they could generate up to 1 megawatt apiece. That's pretty nice. Some of them can be used to make bridges across the river. They actually form a bridge. You build the generators off-site, you bring them to the river, drop them to the bottom, link them together, place your road on top, and you've got yourself a hydroelectric dam without causing any flooding. Nice idea. They also have these generators that work off the seafloor and take advantage of the tides. Now, this won't work in the southern latitudes close to the equator because the tides aren't that much. But you get up toward Massachusetts, along the coast of Newfoundland, Alaska, places like that, where you have a 20 or 30 foot tide, now you've got a sizable amount of moving water and you can generate and store electricity. So we've talked about wind generators, we've talked about tidal generators, we've talked about the wave motion generators that work off floating devices that go up and down with the undulating water and generate electricity for coastal cities. We've talked about electric cars, and we've also talked about what you can do to make that a reality. We've talked about preparedness. I highly recommend, while you're working that overtime this summer, take one of those checks. Go to 1-800-PREPARE.com and get some supplies in your house. Start with something basic. You don't need to spend any more than $50 or $60 to get a start. This is the kind of stuff you're not going to find at Walmart. You can find it because these are specialized, well-packaged, long-term storage devices and items that will protect your family and your friends and yourself from being a burden on your local emergency staff, your EMT, your fire departments, and your FEMA. You could take care of yourself by doing this in advance. Those people that live along the Gulf or 50 to 100 miles in from the Gulf, be prepared. You may have 14 to 23 major storms this summer. How do they know that? They're already looking out in South Africa where these storms begin to develop and come toward us. They already know that the precursors to these storms are setting up. This could be the worst storm season since 2005. I would listen to the experts, and I would simply make a small effort and get prepared. Now, in the coming weeks, the month of June, here at X Squared Radio, we're going to have some more interviews. We're talking to the author of Universe Solved. We're also talking to Dr. Ed Close. He was on November of last year. We talked about transcendental physics. He has a new book coming out. It's not ready yet. He's got a white paper out. Very interesting stuff we're going to be covering. And we have about 17 minutes left in the program. Maybe less than that. Maybe about 12 minutes left in the program. If you want to be part of the program tonight, 415-762-1161. If you have an opinion about the Gulf oil spill from BP, if you have any innovative devices out there that you would like to see get a little airtime and talk about, you can come on the program tonight and talk about it. If you want to talk about the upcoming elections, we don't talk about politics too much here, but we do talk about issues. And if you want to talk about some upcoming issues that have to do with energy or preparedness or space travel or defense, I'd be more than happy to talk about those here on X Squared Radio. We are making some progress in our private company, and we're getting ready to get this electric car business up and running. I appreciate your patience with it, sticking with us and watching for it and visiting the website. Thousands of you have written in and said you'd like to buy one of the cars or one of the trucks. That's certainly helpful. Keep spreading the word. Make sure to keep talking to your congressman there in Kentucky or in North Carolina, where our two locations are. Let's keep talking to them. Keep it in the buzz. Remember, 17% of you said you wanted to buy an electric vehicle. Well, get ready, because they're going to be affordable. They're going to be useful. They're not golf carts with doors now. These are vehicles that accelerate. That little silver sports car you see on the website in the gasoline version goes 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds. Is that quick enough for you? The electric version should be just as spunky. So keep your eye out for those. Keep visiting the website. Keep coming back to X Squared Radio. And remember, we're a proud member of the BBS Radio Network, the most listened to Internet Talk Radio Network in North America. Also, remember that we are making a run for syndication here at X Squared Radio. So please click on the link, webtalkradio.net. webtalkradio.net, and go to the Science and Paranormal section, look up X Squared Radio. We have 30-minute versions of X Squared Radio there. Some have interviews, some are just issues that we like to talk about here on this program. It's a short listen, 30 minutes. The more you click on it, the more you send your friends to it, the better our chances at syndication, which means we get to play on the airwaves. We get to be part of the AM broadcast media. And it's about time that some late-night paranormal talk radio got out there and competed with the 800-pound gorilla. We approach it from a different angle. We like to talk about things at a much more informed, more scientific level. We think, based on our 5 years here at X Squared Radio, that you like it too. We appreciate you being part of the program tonight. Again, our call-in number, 415-762-1161, if you'd like to be part of the program. I know it's Memorial Day weekend, a lot going on out there. I want you to make sure that you keep yourself safe. Have a wonderful Memorial Day off. If you're not working, if you are working, make sure you get that time and a half in there. We appreciate you being part of the program. We'll see you next week right here on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.